A call to live, a call to die, a call to spend your life for Jesus, here and around the world till he returns. These are the stories and conversations about God's mission and the people dedicating their life to it. I'm your host, Paul Aiken, Provost and Professor of Missions at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. This is Amazon to the Himalayas. Welcome to Amazon to the Himalayas podcast. I'm your host, Paul Aiken. In today's episode, we'll be talking and learning about Pioneers. Pioneers mobilizes and supports over 3,000 missionaries and marketplace professionals working in nearly 100 countries around the world. And I'm talking today with Steve Richardson, the president of Pioneers. Steve has served as the president of Pioneers since 1999. He was raised in Indonesia, where his parents planted churches amongst a jungle tribe. Later in life, Steve and his wife Arlene also spent more than a decade planting churches among an unreached people in Southeast Asia. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Paul. It's a joy to be with you today.
Yeah, why don't we just start by you telling us a little bit about yourself? I know I just kind of gave a flyover bio there, but tell us a little bit more about who you are.
So as you mentioned, having a front row seat to the power of the gospel among the Sawi tribe, they numbered about 3,000, one of several hundred isolated tribes buried in the jungles of New Guinea. So I spent my first 15 years in that context in a fairly traditional animistic setting. And then and saw the breakthrough of the gospel and dad and mom's prayerful discovery of what we sometimes today call redemptive analogies, the bridges to communication that God has prepared for his emissaries. When I was about 10, really sensed God's call into missions myself, and not just riding on my parents' coattails. Long story short, ended up marrying one of the daughters of the founder of Pioneers when Pioneers was just a startup ministry back in 1979. Maybe there were 15 or 20 people involved at that time, and it's just been a joy to participate and grow and learn with the organization. And as you know, we've got people in close to 100 countries around the world today.
Yeah, praise the Lord. I appreciate you sharing some of that. I do want to kind of transition to Pioneers. Can you tell us a little bit about the organization? How did it get started? Why did it get started? What was the original goal and purpose of the organization?
So my father-in-law, Ted Fletcher, and Peggy had a corporate successful journey. He came to Christ when Billy Graham visited the front lines of the Korean War and came back not only with a heart for the Lord, but also for the gospel in other countries. But he had a successful career with the Wall Street Journal, became national sales manager with Dow Jones, with Mobil Oil, but sensed God likely had a place for them in more direct ministry of a global nature. So anyway, they applied to several agencies. They were told they're too old because they were in their 40s. They didn't have sufficient theological education. They had four kids, which was too many. So at some point, Ted started thinking, you know what? It ought not to be quite that hard to get involved in, you know, global ministry. A friend from New Zealand said, Ted, why don't you start your own mission organization? So they started sending short-termers. One thing led to another. And yeah, today we've got about 16 or 17 sending offices around the world. And about a little over 50% of our membership is from the U.S. The rest are from other countries. These are full-time gospel church planters in close to 100 countries, as I mentioned. So it's been remarkable how God has continued to grow this ministry.
That's awesome. You know, one of the questions I always love to ask people who are involved in different mission organizations is, you know, the kind of the million-dollar question in missions is, what role does your organization play with the local church, and how do those two things kind of fit together? So I would love to ask you, from your perspective with Pioneers, what role does the local church play in sending missionaries through your organization?
So a partnership with the local church was one of our original core values, right from the inception. It's kind of woven into the DNA of the organization. Now, what does that mean? It means that any candidate wanting to join Pioneers comes with the recommendation of their church. Every member of Pioneers has a sending church. The church's reference And in other ways, they're consulted in the journey from the early stages. Churches are invited to participate and get to know the organization and not just kind of help from a distance. So, you know, at least a couple of times a year, we have what we call church partner forums, and we invite as many churches as would like to participate. Normally, there are 40 to 60 participants from a dozen or a couple dozen churches. And it's their opportunity to kind of look into the engine room and understand more of how missions works, ask questions, build relationships, and then, of course, helping with key decisions along the ministry timeline of their missionary. We see ourselves in Pioneers as serving local churches in helping to connect the dots and accomplish their mission among the least reached peoples of the world.
That's great. What about missionary candidates? How does Pioneer vet missionary candidates? What does the assessment and screening process look like for new missionaries?
It starts with a simple conversation. We have what we call a start form that's available on the Pioneer's website. It takes a minute or 2 minutes to fill out. As someone connects with Pioneers in that way, they're given a mission mentor who helps them evaluate where they're at. You know, some people come, they have a long way to go. Others come, I mean, in some cases, they're even transferring from another mission organization. So obviously, there's the whole spectrum. Assuming someone is at a good, healthy point of preparedness for the rest of the journey, then they're transferred to what we call a candidate coordinator. The candidate coordinator goes into more depth, helps them through the application process, arranges several series of interviews and psychological, biblical testing to assess where they're at in terms of their personal health, their marriage, family, and Bible knowledge, and so forth. So at that point, there's a psychologist that enters the picture as well. And then they have a more formal candidate interview with a group of people. And then they may be invited to attend our initial orientation training program, which we call Explore. Assuming they're accepted at that point, they would launch their support raising process. And after however long that takes, they would come back for some additional training. And during that period, which, you know, may be anywhere from a few months to a couple of years, they're also fulfilling some additional Bible requirements or other things that they may need in the process.
That's great. Obviously, you guys send people out for varying lengths of assignments, I'm assuming there's, you know, maybe half a year, year, 2 year, and then maybe beyond that. But if you could talk through, just kind of curious about the average length of the process. I know that some people are able to move through quickly. Other people, as you mentioned, might take several years. If somebody was coming to you today and saying, hey, I think I'm interested, and let's say they're a pretty fit candidate, how long do you think it would take them from maybe first contact to landing on the field?
So if they're quite a fit candidate, I would estimate that would probably take about 14 months. Now, I've heard a year and a half. That probably include, you know, a certain percentage who have quite a long way to go.
Yeah.
And some have taken as long as 5 years or something like that. Sure. And others are ready to go within 2 months or whatever it is. So yeah, I would say a little over a year would be a typical medium.
Yeah, I think that's a good process. Some of my background is in assessment and deployment and those kinds of things with the mission organization. And so there's a lot that goes in. People don't quite realize when you're thinking about moving an individual or even a family overseas to the other side of the world, there's a lot that goes into that before you want to kind of put those people on a plane. And so, yeah, I appreciate the work that you guys do to kind of vet and screen those candidates. You know, I'm talking to you from Southern Seminary here in Louisville, Kentucky. Obviously, we're passionate about theological training and preparation for pastors and for missionaries and for church leaders. I would love to hear you talk about the role of theological education. You know, what role do you think that has for missionary candidates? Do they need theological training? Is that a help? Is that a hindrance? How do you guys think through that?
I would find it hard to imagine that it's a hindrance. So I would just say a blanket no to that notion. What someone may be getting at, you know, if they even suggest that, might be that, you know, a lot of the roles that we're filling around the world today have to do with marketplace opportunities and roles. It's more of a bivocational type setting. And sometimes people who have trained exclusively for ministry type activities may not be as well suited for running a business and things like that. So that's probably what's behind that part of the question. But I would say that even if you're filling a business as ministry type setting out there, which many of our people are, boy, I tell you, the more you understand the church, the better hermeneutic you apply in your cross-cultural evangelism, the more you understand what it means to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. And your Bible knowledge, engaging with Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, and others, you're just better off. So then for an organization like ours, it's a question of, okay, what's sort of a minimum kind of starting point? And we have that, which is basically boils down to about a year of Bible and theology is sort of a threshold. But I would say a lot of our people are on a lifelong learning journey. You know, high percentages have advanced degrees and go on for various additional credentials if they don't have them already. So I would say, Paul, that more and more the role of Westerners in the global picture is one of coming alongside fairly mature churches in order to help them with their mission activity, their Great Commission activities. If you don't have the basics theologically, you're going to be really outclassed by the people you're trying to help.
That's a good word. I very much appreciate that perspective.
Are you a pastor or church leader looking to extend your impact? The Doctor of Ministry degree from Southern Seminary allows you to learn from our experienced faculty who will guide you through this degree program designed to help you make an impact in your current ministry context. Learn from our faculty who are pastors committed to training pastors and will equip you to maximize your impact on your ministry. Find out which program is right for you at sbts.edu/doctoral.
As you think about sending new missionaries, obviously there's an entire world out there, 8 billion people. I mean, the need is enormous. And as you think about unreached, I mean, just multiple billions of people around the world with little to no access to the gospel. So as you guys think about that at Pioneers, where do you typically try to prioritize sending people? And how is location determined for a particular missionary family or unit?
The answer to that question, it probably gets into another possible topic, and that is what's kind of unique about Pioneers. And I don't want to be so presumptuous as to suggest that there aren't other agencies that also look at it this way. But basically, we posture ourselves as, how can we help you and your sending church accomplish the vision that you collectively believe God is calling you to among least reached peoples? So it's not so much about, you know, Pioneers has a need in X location, and we're looking for somebody to fill that post. There are some of those. You know, we need people for various places. But it's more, okay, I mean, do you have a sense of where God is leading you? And then do you have the capacity and the maturity to actually lead a new effort in that location? If not, then we have what we call launch teams in various places around the world that we can place you in for 1 or 2 years to get your bearings. And one of our goals that I'm really excited about is over the next several years, we would love to be making an impact, you know, engaging another 250 unreached people groups for Pioneers. But we're not going to be saying, you know, you need to go to this place or you need to go. It's a dialogue with the individual or the couple and their sending church. It's a discovery, a discernment process that we work on together. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. One leader from a mission organization described it as a bit of a dance. You know,
yes.
We kind of have some priorities, but then we also recognize that the Lord brings people to us that also have desires and priorities. And we try to figure out how do we make those things kind of fit together. And so I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Can you tell us about the type of work? You know, you talked some about marketplace. I'd love for you to kind of dive a little deeper there. What kind of work, what type of work are Pioneer missionaries doing around the world?
My wife and I went as a student originally back in 1986. And I was one of three international students at a major state university in Southeast Asia. And I had a $100 a month scholarship from that university. So I spent the first 3 years learning the national language, the local language spoken by only 30 million people at the time, and the culture of that language. So 3 years spent doing things that I would have loved to have done anyway, even if I was, you know, if I had a ministry visa. And then I spent 3 years teaching American culture at a government-sponsored institute. And I spent 3 years, I'm just using my own journey as an example here. I spent 3 years as a consultant to a garment manufacturing firm that was exporting garments to Europe and other places around the world, and just helping them, you know, with all kinds of stuff, ranging from their marketing to training some of their people. So yeah, we've got people doing almost anything you can imagine. We've got people flying with airlines, you know, where they spend 3 days, for 3 or 4 days a week in the cockpit with some of the most unreached people in the world. You know, I hesitate for security reasons to mention the ethnic names, but I mean, these are incredible opportunities. We've got engineers, we've got all kinds of tourism, ecotourism, we've got sea cucumber production places. To me, Paul, you know, it's like the priesthood of the believer was sort of rediscovered in the Reformation days. And today, if I feel like around the world, the church is rediscovering the missionhood of the believer, that this is an all hands on deck proposition. Mm. And all of us need, the Great Commission is given to all of us, not just a select few. And it's a matter of how has God wired us? What background has he given us? Where can we find opportunities to maximize who we are on behalf of the Great Commission?
Amen. I appreciate you sharing that. We probably could have a whole nother episode on this next question, but you know, we're going to try to limit ourselves. But I would just love for you to share briefly kind of what the Lord is doing in and through pioneer workers around the world. As you think back on the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months, can you just briefly tell us maybe one or two things that you've heard that the Lord is doing around the world that's particularly encouraging to you?
You know, one thing that's encouraging to me as you ask that question is that the Lord seems to be opening up some significant doors of opportunity in the Middle East. And I'm thinking particularly of the kingdom, where it was quite difficult, you know, until recently. But now I'm just like, there are a lot of openings coming up outside of even just the major oil companies. And so that's exciting to me. Another example is that for over 25 years now, one of our members, one of our workers with a passion for Indonesia, started organizing an annual conference of churches who also had an interest in what God would do in Indonesia. And they've been gathering somewhere in the country, different churches hosted at different times for 25 years now. And the number of unreached peoples without some form of engagement, particularly people on the ground, mostly Indonesian people, church planters on the ground, has gone down to virtually zero over that time. And this is an individual who had a rough background, came from a dysfunctional home, and he wouldn't mind my saying that, he and his wife. And it's just the way that God has used this individual to actually sort of pave the path. They're seeing literally, you know, using some of the disciple-making strategies and so forth, they're seeing tens of thousands, according to reports, of people, mostly in Java, but in some other parts of Indonesia as well, come to Christ and forming just hundreds and hundreds of small house church type fellowships all over the place. So those are a couple of examples that come to mind. And as you mentioned, I could go on.
Yeah. Last question before we switch gears to some kind of lightning round, kind of quicker hitting questions. You kind of touched on this a moment ago, but I would love to give you the opportunity to kind of talk about some distinctives that you believe Pioneers has. And so the question is, out of all the mission sending organizations in the world, what makes Pioneers unique?
You know, it's funny. Our first brochure decades ago was called Distinctives, which I say this humorously, wasn't totally appreciated by the other mission organizations.
Sure.
It's like, what makes you think you're distinctive? But I would say, and each organization obviously has a place, a niche in God's big plan. I guess what's one thing that's coming to my mind is it's a big organization with global reach, but with a real personal family feel, where you don't really feel like you're part of a big organization as it relates to the negative aspects of that. And I love that. A broader answer would be our 8 core values. We touched on, you know, a few of them. We work in teams. We honor the local church on both the sending and receiving end. Participatory servant leadership, flexibility and innovation. We have an innovation lab. I don't know how many mission agencies have innovation labs. Really, because we were started by a business person, we really see ministry as integrated, you know, with all the professions. People love Pioneers. They may leave for one reason or another, but invariably they leave with a joy and an appreciation for the organization they've been a part of. And word of mouth is the best marketing for our organization.
That's great. Good response.
Master of Divinity students can save over $1,800 each semester by training for ministry on the Southern Seminary campus. Join us for our next Southern Seminary Preview Day to learn how the Master of Divinity will prepare you for a lifetime of faithfulness. Register today at sbts.edu/preview.
I want to switch to some lightning round questions. Your favorite missionary biography?
Oh, well, besides, you know, Hudson Taylor and his spiritual secrets and so forth, one that's coming to my mind, and this will sound self-serving, was Dad's second book. So Dad's first book was Peace Child, which sold hundreds of thousands of copies. But a lesser known one is called Lords of the Earth. And it's the story of Stan Dale, an Australian missionary, who gave his life as a martyr among a cannibal tribe called the Yali in the highlands of New Guinea. And that's a story worth reading. I would highly recommend it to any of your listeners.
Perfect. The next question is a fill-in-the-blank question. The greatest challenge facing pioneers today is blank.
Oh, wow. You know, I think it's in, I was going to say keeping up with, but I would prefer to stay ahead of, the changing environment, both within North America and our rapidly changing culture, but also the changing global environment and what are the best contributions of Westerners in today's global mission setting. And I think those contributions, including being encouragers and being catalysts and being connectors, being resourcers, and in some contexts still being pioneers, because we have access to some places that other people don't have. So, you know, those four or five roles are key. But I think executing on our best contribution is a big challenge.
Yeah, that's good. Last question. Someone listening to this episode right now says, okay, thanks, Steve. You've convinced me. I want to be sent with the help of pioneers. You know, what are their first steps? What advice would you give to them?
Well, number one, pray for God's direction confidently. Then, as far as pioneers is concerned, I would say go on our website and fill out that little start form. Don't be afraid to do it. You can always exempt yourself from the process anytime you want to. You would be contacted by someone who's also counseled a lot of other people. Our primary goal isn't to get somebody into pioneers. If that happens, great. But our primary goal is to help people discern their best next steps, wherever they end up. And I would say if you haven't taken the Perspectives on the World Christian Movement course, that's a really good thing to do. Takes several months, a bit challenging, but that's a great next step. And I would say, here's another self-serving, I would say read my book, Is the Commission Still Great? And engage with that, with somebody, you know, one of your mentors or somebody who's knowledgeable about missions in your life. So those are a few ideas.
Yeah, thank you. Steve, thank you so much for your time and for the conversation today.
Thank you, Paul. God bless you.
To hear more conversations like this, please subscribe to this podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media. Thanks again for listening to this episode.
Amazon to the Himalayas is brought to you by the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. At Southern Seminary, we're preparing the next wave of missionaries, church planters, Bible translators, and more for a lifetime of faithfulness to the Great Commission. To learn more about how Southern Seminary can prepare you to take the gospel from the Amazon to the Himalayas, visit sbts.edu. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.